Namaste Sarasvati Devam Gauravani Vacharam Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachari Sitarani Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 55, Text 17 through 25. With more action-packed verses here, with no purports. And because this is Gita Jayanti, or mainly I'm going to talk about the Bhagavad Gita after we cover the verses today. So, start with text 17. Sacha Shambaram Habyetya Samyugaya Samavyayat. Samyugaya samavayat. Avishayastam akshepai. Shipansanjayan kalim. Sacha shambaram habyeta. Samyugaya samahavat. Samahayat. Avishayastam akshepai. Shipansanjanayan kalim. Sacha shambaram abhyetya. Samyugaya samavayat. Avishayastam akshepai. Shipansanjanayan kalim. Students.
Yeah.
sa,
he,
cha, and, shambaram, shambara, abhyetya, approaching, samyugaya, to battle, samahavat, called him, avishayai, intolerable, tum, him, akshepai, with insults, shipan, reviling, sanjanayan, inciting, kalim, a fight. So before we read this, just to briefly summarize, if you haven't been following the story, this is the story of Prajumna. Prajumna originally was Cupid, who was killed by Lord Shiva, and therefore he took he sort of entered into the body of Prajumna, sort of joined Cupid and Prajumna together in some mystical way, which is a kind of a long discussion. And he took birth, where did he take birth? He took birth from, actually he was the son of Rukmini. Okay, so he was kidnapped when he was less than 10 days old by Shambara, this demon. The demon took him and threw him in the ocean, thought he had killed him, but a fish swallowed him, and then the fish was caught by fishermen and brought to the home of Shambara. And the fish was opened up in the kitchen, because they ate fish, they were demons, and there was this child, Prajumna, was there. So Shambara gave it to his maidservant to raise the child, and it just turns out that this maidservant named Mahati turned out to be Rati, right? Yes. Who was the former wife of Cupid. So, in other words, she was reunited with her husband, although she was raising him as his mother. They get stranger. No, so then, so finally, he grows up, and he's very, very handsome. In fact, he looks just like Krishna, practically. He resembles Krishna, a very, very beautiful young man, and the woman who raised him, Rati, is now becoming very attracted to him. This confuses Prajumna a little bit, but then she tells him the whole story and says basically that the Shambara had tried to, you know, kill him and that he should fight and kill the Shambara demon. And so that is where we are up to. So I'll read through the next few texts. Prajumna approached Shambara and called him to battle, hurling intolerable insults at him to foment a conflict. Offended by these harsh words, Shambara became as agitated as a kicked snake. He came out, club in hand, his eyes red with rage. Shambara whirled his club swiftly about and then hurled it at the wise Prajumna, producing a sound as sharp as a thunder crack. As Shambara's club came flying toward him, Lord Prajumna knocked it away with his own. Then, O king, Prajumna angrily threw his club at the enemy. Resorting to the black magic of the daichas taught to him by Maya Dhanava, Shambara suddenly appeared in the sky and released a downpour of weapons upon Krishna's son. Harassed by this rain of weapons, Lord Rukmineya, which of course means the son of Rukmini, the greatly powerful warrior, made use of the mystic science called Mahamaya, which he had learned from his wife, which was created from the modes of goodness and which could defeat all other mystic power. The demon then unleashed hundreds of mystic weapons belonging to the Guyakshas, Gandharvas, Pishachas, Urugas, and Rakshasas, but Lord Karshni, Prajumna, struck them all down. What does this name Karshni mean? Son of Krishna, right? So he's called the son of Krishna and the son of Rukmini, so we're being reminded of his position. 24, drawing his sharp-edged sword, Prajumna forcibly cut off Shambara's head, complete with red mustache, helmet, and earrings. As the residents of the higher planet showered Prajumna with flowers and chanted his praises, his wife appeared in the sky and transported him through the heavens back to the city of Dwarka. Okay, so that takes us up to that point in the story. You're going to want to come back tomorrow and see how this ends. Okay, so more wonderful pastimes of Krishna, Krishna's son Prajumna, that are all very exciting and have so many lessons within them. No purports there, so we'll move on. This is Gita Jayanti. What happened on Gita Jayanti? What? Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. Where did he speak it? Yes. You had it. Someone else? Go ahead. And the battle of Kurukshetra, yes. So here we are in the middle of the battle of Kurukshetra, and Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. So this is a very, very important day because the Bhagavad Gita is extremely important to the Vaishnavas and actually to the whole world. So we'll talk about that a little bit. I'm going to start off by reading something from Srila Prabhupada, and this is Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, verse 1, our beginning, which starts out, what's the first verse? Y'all know it? What is it? Can you say it? Dhritarashtra vacha dharmakshetra kurukshetra samavecha yutsava mamakshapam. Very good. Okay. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do? And so now Srila Prabhupada introduces the Bhagavad Gita to us. He says, Bhagavad Gita is the widely read theistic science summarized in the Gita Mahatmya, glorification of the Gita. There it says that one should read Bhagavad Gita very scrutinizingly with the help of a person who is a devotee of Sri Krishna and try to understand it without personally motivated interpretations. That means we should read it with Srila Prabhupada's purports. The example of clear understanding is there in the Bhagavad Gita itself, in the way the teaching is understood by Arjuna, who has heard the Gita directly from the Lord. If someone is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita in that line of specific succession without motivated interpretation, then he surpasses all studies of Vedic wisdom and all the scriptures of the world. One will find in the Bhagavad Gita all that is contained in other scriptures, but the reader will also find things which are not to be found elsewhere. That is the specific standard of the Gita. It is the perfect theistic science because it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. I'll just read one more paragraph. The topics discussed by Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya as described in the Mahabharata form the basic principle for this great philosophy. It is understood that this philosophy evolved on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is a sacred place of pilgrimage from time immemorial of the Vedic age. It was spoken by the Lord when he was present personally on this planet for the guidance of mankind. So it's described, and Srila Prabhupada explains, that the Bhagavad Gita contains everything found in all scriptures. It is complete, and also there is additional knowledge which is not found elsewhere. So the greatest knowledge of philosophy, of religion, of spiritual knowledge that we can have is found in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says this is a perfect and pure theistic science. Why? Because it is spoken directly by Lord Krishna. Later in the Bhagavad Gita 7.2, Krishna says that he is giving Arjuna knowledge, all knowledge, both jnana and vijnana, which Prabhupada translates as knowledge of both phenomenal and numistic. Is that the right word? Numistic? It's not noumenal. I thought it was. That's a different word. It's numistic. Can we get 7.2? Numinous. Numinous is the word. Okay, numinous actually means spiritual or relating to divinely qualities. Phenomenal, nominal, and noumenal is another philosophical discrimination, but this is a little different. Noumenous means basically spiritual, theistic. So in other words, all knowledge is given in Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada translates the jnana as material knowledge and vijnana as spiritual knowledge. Knowledge of the spirit soul, knowledge of our constitutional position as servants of Krishna. So that is why this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is very special. Because everything is contained there that relates to our nature with the absolute truth. Now, specifically, Srila Prabhupada talks about in the introduction that there are five topic matters, five subjects that the Bhagavad Gita covers. We need to have somebody tell us what are some of those five topics that the Bhagavad Gita covers. Anybody know? You could put this in your notes. Five subject matters as you study the Bhagavad Gita. No, nobody? Okay, we'll go to the adult side. What are they? Yes. Jiva, Ishvara, Prakriti, time, Kala, and Karma. Okay, so it's Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Kama. Kala and Karma. Kama is also covered, but Karma is the main one. Okay, so in other words, first of all, Ishvara, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, clearly establishes Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's very clear in Bhagavad Gita. Secondly, the jiva. The relationship of Krishna and the jiva, in other words, our relationship with God, is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Prakriti, material nature, how we interrelate with the three modes of nature. We have many chapters on the modes of nature and how they act in so many ways. Kala, how the eternal time factor is working. Krishna says, time I am, destroyer of the worlds. And also karma, how our action affects us. And we even have chapters called Karma Yoga and Karma Yoga Action and Krishna Consciousness, where this whole idea of our action and our specifically how our activity in Krishna consciousness and devotional service is so important for us in the process of self-realization. So when we say self-realization, this is, of course, is a big thing, and many people use this term self-realization. Somehow it means to understand who I am, what is the real nature of the self. But we can't really understand the nature of the self without knowing the nature of the self in relationship with God. This is what many people miss. There are many types of yoga and types of meditation. They miss this very, very critical point, because there's very little meaning of knowing the self if you don't know, you know, the super self, the super soul. If you don't know how does the self relate to that which is greater, and particularly our relationship with Krishna. So this is all covered in the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is this perfect science that helps us to understand clearly what is our relationship with God, what is our activity in this world, and how do we perform devotional service to be able to get out of this material world and go back to Godhead. So why does Krishna come to give this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita? Well, this is Krishna's compassionate nature. And he has his purposes. This is reading from the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, which is very, very wonderful. That introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada really covers almost the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness within it. Anyway, at one point he says, Lord Krishna descends specifically to reestablish the real purpose of life when man forgets that purpose. Even then, out of many, many human beings who awaken, there may be one who actually enters into the spirit of understanding his position, and for him, this Bhagavad Gita is spoken. Actually, we are all swallowed up by the tigress of nescience. That's an interesting term, the tigress of nescience. But the Lord is very merciful upon living entities, especially human beings. To this end, he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, making his friend Arjuna his student. Being an associate of Lord Krishna, Arjuna was above all ignorance, but Arjuna was put into ignorance on the battle of Kurukshetra just to question Lord Krishna about the problems of life so the Lord could explain them for the benefit of future generations of human beings and chalk out the plan of life. Then man could act accordingly and perfect the mission of human life. So in other words, Arjuna was put into this position of seemingly ignorance. In other words, he becomes bewildered, he drops his bow, he says, Krishna, I can't go on, I don't know what I'm doing, you know, please help me. So obviously Arjuna was a perfect and pure devotee, eternal associate of Krishna, so he knows the purpose of life. But this is a specific pastime where Krishna arranges for his pure devotee to appear to be in ignorance like one of us and to ask those questions that anybody would ask, that people would ask in this material world. To understand, you know, what is my purpose of life? What is my duty? What should I be doing? And therefore, that was the entree, the opening, for Krishna to speak the entire philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. So the purposes of Krishna coming and giving the Bhagavad Gita are given in the Gita itself. if we look to the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we see that Krishna comes when there's a decline in religion and a predominance of irreligion. And 4:7, yada yada dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutanam dharmasya dhatmanam shrijamyaham. Whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice, O descendant Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. And earlier he'd explained that the disciplic succession of Bhagavad Gita, which was originally given to the sun god and then to Ikshvaku and then to Manu, had been lost. So now he's again establishing the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna gives three specific reasons why he comes to this material world. Anybody want to give a shot? What are the three reasons that Krishna comes, he describes in verse 8 of chapter 4? I'll give you a hint with the Sanskrit. Pritchanaya sadunam vinashaya chudushkritam dharma samstap anartayo sambhuvam yoge yoge. He gives three reasons. Want to give it a try? That was the verse before, I think. You got that was 4:7 when he says, yeah, whenever there's a decline of your religion, he comes. So what are the three specific purposes? Okay. Let's give it a shot over here. We have another? To protect the sadhus. Prichanai sadhunam. To protect the devotees. Vinashaya chaduskritam. To annihilate the demons. Dharma samstapanartaya. To establish principles of religion. And how is he establishing principles of religion here? By reciting the Bhagavad Gita. Okay? So in other words, he's saying, I'm doing this to establish principles of religion, and he's doing it right there. Okay? By speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Now, his other purposes are to kill the demons, which we know he did when he came as Krishna. He killed such demons as, who are some demons he killed? Just say them. Putana. Putana. What was it? Agasura. Yeah, okay, you got him. Yeah, and all the other asuras. Yes, so we know from Krishna book that so many demons were killed by Krishna. But here's the interesting thing. It's actually not necessary for Krishna to come to kill the demons. In the purport to 4:8, Srila Prabhupada says, as far as the atheists are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear to destroy them as he did with the demons Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons. But the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees who are always harassed by the demoniac. So Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than to kill Kamsa, but both were performed simultaneously. Therefore, it is said that to deliver the devotee and vanquish the demon miscreants, the Lord appears in different incarnations. And one of the ways that Krishna supports his devotees, that he delivers his devotees, is by giving spiritual knowledge. So the spiritual knowledge is very, very important, and it helps to relieve the suffering of living entities. In Bhagavad Gita 10:11, Krishna says, to show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So this is one of the merciful features of Krishna, that he gives spiritual knowledge out of his compassion and mercy on the conditioned souls who are suffering this material world, and also for his devotees to enliven and encourage his devotees. Now, Krishna also not only comes himself, but he also sends his pure devotees. He sends his representatives to deliver this message of Bhagavad Gita. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita 4:34, Krishna says what the appropriate process of receiving spiritual knowledge is. It says, just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge because they have seen the truth. So this is the mission of the pure devotees, the representatives of Krishna, those great spiritual masters and acharyas who have come before us, to give the spiritual knowledge to everyone. The Vaishnava, devotee of the Lord, understands the suffering of the conditioned soul, and out of compassion wants to help them. But it is not just a sentimental idea of, oh, I want to help suffering people. Sometimes people have this idea. But one also has to have the process. One has to have the knowledge to give people that will actually relieve their suffering. What good is it to just feel sorry for people? You know, that, oh, I feel so sorry, I feel bad that people are suffering, if you don't have a cure for that suffering. So the devotees have a cure for the suffering. And that cure is the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So that is our position. The devotee is able to give true spiritual knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, particularly in this age of Kali, we know that part of that knowledge is understanding the Yuga Dharma of Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name. So the devotees are always trying to give this chanting of the holy name to others. But chanting also means to speak about Krishna and to give knowledge of Krishna. And one way that in this age that we can do that is through, Srila Prabhupada said, the Brihat Mridanga. In other words, the Mridanga is used in chanting the holy name, but he said the Brihat Mridanga, which he called the printing press, allows us to print and distribute books that can get to millions and millions of people. And this is actually a fact of what has happened. Somehow or another, by Krishna's grace and Srila Prabhupada's incredible potency, Srila Prabhupada's books, I think, are second only to the Bible in total printing of, you know, books throughout the world. I mean, you know, if you look at Prabhupada, the totality of Prabhupada's books, there's been, you know, just, I think it's just behind the Bible in the number of, I used to have the figures, I don't have them with me, but it's very impressive, hundreds of millions of these transcendental literatures which have been printed and distributed throughout the world. So this is very much part of our tradition. Anyone know who the first Sankirtan party was? They were sent by Jiva Goswami and Lokanath Swami. Shamananda, Naratam, and Srinivas, right? They went out, they were sent by their spiritual masters to Bengal and to Orissa with a big cartload full of books. They had written, the Goswamis had written and compiled all these books, and they actually had this huge cartload, big cartload full of books. And they were deputed, and these are like greatest devotees, these incredible pure devotees, Naratam Das Thakur, these are our acharyas in our line. And their business, given by their spiritual master, was to take this cartload of books and distribute them. And of course, they had all kinds of incredible adventures and as they went, and there's so many stories. But this is our Vaishnav line. And we can see that this continued on in later years. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was constantly writing books and preaching and wanting to distribute books, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who took up the mission of Bhaktivinoda and further expanded throughout India and wrote many, many Vaishnava literatures, translations, also wrote he had a daily newspaper that he was distributing, as well as all sorts of other journals. So this idea of getting out transcendental literature to the masses of people was established by them. And then, of course, as Srila Prabhupada came, under the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he perfected this idea of book distribution. And he expanded this all over the world so that, of course, he followed the instructions of his guru by first preaching in the English language, translating these books into English for us, writing these wonderful purports that explain these books, and then traveled throughout the world and established translations of like in 100 languages now. We have Bhagavad Gita and these books. So they're translated in practically every major language of the world. And in fact, every year there's some new translation and some other, you know, less common language is coming constantly. So Bhagavad Gita has been made available and all the other spiritual literatures to people all over the world. So we have this very, very wonderful opportunity to give Bhagavad Gita to others. And I think this is for the Vaishnavas and for the followers of Srila Prabhupada, this is the real meaning of Gita Jayanti, not to chant Bhagavad Gita, which is incredibly wonderful and ecstatic. I hope everybody's able to come. And not just to remember that this is the day that the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, but to think about how we can get this Bhagavad Gita to others. So, of course, there's so many ways you can do this. You can sponsor Bhagavad Gitas. You can buy a case of Bhagavad Gitas, I think, for $100 or something, distribute them to people, or just sponsor them, and the temple will distribute these books. But Gita Jayanti is a very, very auspicious time to distribute the Bhagavad Gita, and actually through this whole month of December is a wonderful time, because not only do we have the spirit of Gita Jayanti, but in our Western world, the Christmas spirit is there. And people are in the mood of giving, and it's actually, we always found, those of us who used to go out on Sankirtan, that this was our best time. We always called it the Christmas marathon, because people were more willing to give, they're in a receptive mood, you know, so it's a very, very nice time to try to distribute books. You have three or four, five more minutes more for the kids? Okay, so I'll end with a story. This is one of my more interesting stories of distributing a Bhagavad Gita, okay? I think I've told this once before, but it's been a while and probably a new audience. Okay, so this is a story that involves myself and Mother Sukada. A lot of my stories involve Mother Sukada. We used to do Sankirtan together in Miami for a couple of years, wasn't it? You know, we had some great adventures. And Chaturbahu was there, and who else? Who was the other lady?
Myrnalini,
yeah. Okay, so we were on a Sankirtan party, and also Mother Montrini was with us, my wife. And so, Oh, yes, and my daughter Lali Tasaki, who was 2 years old, I think, was also Krunan Haridas's mother, was with us as a baby. So anyway, we're in Montgomery, Alabama, and you can imagine in the 70s, this is not exactly, you know, a liberal climate, you know, people who are receptive to, you know, strange foreign philosophies coming into their area. It's much different now. Alabama's wonderful preaching now. You know, I love to go there. But back then, it was a whole different scene. You know? So anyway, we're in Montgomery, and we're out actually at the streetlights, and we're collecting money, and we're giving out Bhagavad Gitas. We're giving out Back to Godheads. So it wasn't long when, I mean, usually what happened, typically the police might come along and they might see what we're doing and they might say you can't do it here or you can't do it in the street and we'd have to move on. That was pretty typical. Sometimes they'd say that. Not this time. This was just get in the car, you're off to jail. They immediately arrested us, although Chaturbahu wasn't with us. He was getting the truck fixed, the van fixed or something. So the three of us get arrested. It was a very large bail amount for us. We didn't have the money, so we had to stay overnight in jail. So anyway, this isn't the good part. This was kind of the part where Krishna tests us a little bit. Although it wasn't that bad. I've been in worse jails. But anyway, all for good purposes, serving the Lord. You know. But
Mother Mantrini wasn't in the jail.
Oh, yeah, no, she wasn't in. That's right. So Chaturbahu and Mantrini... They weren't arrested. In fact, we had this travel trailer that we were pulling. That's another part of the story. So anyway, finally the next day we go in front of the judge. It turns out the judge is kind of a really interesting, pretty nice guy, kind of a pious, one of these old Southern gentlemen. And he asked us what we're doing, and we went back in. And somehow, I don't know how we were, I went back in, but I think he was talking to you. I think he was talking to Sukada primarily, and Sukada was telling us what we're doing and explaining it, the philosophy.
And he was asking, like, what did we do previously, what we're doing
now? Oh, yeah, he was impressed that you were a school teacher before, right? She was always a school teacher, you know, even back before. And then Chaturbahu, he gets up and he starts passing out books, I think, and... I think didn't the bailiff give him some money for one? You know, so anyway, they're distributing books, they're preaching Krishna consciousness, finally calls us all in, and the judge says, well, he says, you probably shouldn't do it, you know, in the streets. They got a law about it. He says, but I think you're good kids, you're doing a good thing. Okay, just go on. I'm not going to charge you with anything. So they let us go. I forget the details, but anyway, they let us go.
One thing is that he gave us his car.
Well, that was later at the trailer.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, okay, here's what happened afterwards. Okay, they had parked our travel trailer about a block away from the courthouse. And my wife, knowing that we probably hadn't eaten anything, which we hadn't, you know, since we were arrested, she cooked up a really nice feast, nice meal for us. And so we all went back to the trailer, and we're sitting down for prasadam. Wonderful prasadam. It's a great relief. They let us go. We didn't get fined or anything. And then there's a knock on the door. And the bailiff comes in. He says, I just want to find out more about what you guys are doing. We said, well, come on, sit down, you know, join us, sit at the table and, you know, have some eat with us. He says, okay. And then about 1 minute later, they'd followed us. There's another knock on the door, and the judge is there. And he says, I just want to find out, talk to you guys a little bit more, find out what you're doing or whatever. And, you know, and so he sits down. And then we were out of ice or something, so the bailiff runs out and buys us ice. And then anyway, we had a really nice talk with the judge. You know, we explained to him all about Krishna consciousness. And then he gives us his card and says, you know, if you ever have any trouble in the city, give me a call. He says, I'll take care of you. I said, great. And then I had a nice Bhagavad Gita hardbound. I said, I just want to give you this Bhagavad Gita. And he said, well, thank you so much. He says, I really appreciate this. He says, how much can I give you for that? And so I said, well, whatever you feel. You know, I wasn't, you know. So he gives $10, you know, for the and pays for the Bhagavad Gita. And they thanked us and left. And that was a wonderful way of that Krishna had made this arrangement, which seemed inauspicious in the beginning, getting put in jail overnight, but turned out to be very auspicious because it gave us this opportunity, you know, for this very influential, important judge to get a Bhagavad Gita and to know about Krishna consciousness. Right. So anyway, those sort of things always kind of kept enlivening us and kept us going, and we always knew that, you know, when you take the austerity, when you take the effort to try to distribute Krishna consciousness, to try to give the spiritual knowledge to others, you can feel that you're protected by the Lord and you're personally guided by Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You feel them working. You can see how they make these arrangements. And anybody who preaches or goes on book distribution or anything like this has these kind of stories, where Krishna makes these wonderful arrangements somehow or another that we come in contact with the conditioned souls who are meant to get the spiritual literature. And that's our success. You know, it's totally enlivening, and we know that we're pleasing Srila Prabhupada by doing that. Okay, maybe time for one or two comments. Madan Mohan Prabhu?
Just wondering if you, with that card, did you ever do follow-up to...
You know, we were so ignorant in those days. You know, we never thought about follow-up. And no, we should have cultivated him. I should have been calling the guy. We should have been visiting him. No, we didn't do... We just went on our way and off to the next town. We were good at planting the seeds. We weren't very good at cultivating the seeds in those days. That's something we've gotten a lot better at, I think, lately. Yes, very well. Well, let's get the microphone over to the back here for Mother Rangavati.
Hare Krishna, thank you for reminding us about the Gita distribution. I was wondering, with the e-books, how will that be calculated? And it seems like that would be exponentially, like, way beyond the almost half a billion books now that have been distributed. So how is that going to work with the e-books?
With the what?
E-books and Kindle and...
Oh, but they're going to be harder to count, aren't they? I suppose you can count the downloads or something. But actually, you know, that's another fantastic... I think it's just incredible. And I think Prabhupada would be so happy to see how now that, you know, Krishna consciousness is so available to everybody, you know. How many unique hits does Krishna.com get? About 1 million a year? You know, like 1 million people are going to Krishna.com, and there's a lot of people that are getting books, and now they're more and more developing, you know, these ideas. In fact, I had some computer problem, and I just wrote to the BBT in Europe, and they sent me the downloads for the whole set of books again, so I got them back on my thing. So, I mean, it's just available like that. It's amazing. And I think it's just another Krishna's arranged for a whole nother wave of distributing spiritual knowledge. Yeah, yeah. I don't know how we're gonna keep count of all those. Yeah. Anything else? Yes, Kalyapani, back from his preaching and book distribution adventures.
What you're saying about Prabhupada's books being second behind the Bible? Do you mean that Prabhupada, there's no author who's printed more books than Prabhupada?
The total number of Bibles sold is probably the greatest, you know, number of books sold of anything in the world. But the second most, you know, if you take Prabhupada's books in totality, are just behind the Bible in numbers that are printed and distributed. Half a billion, yeah, 500 million. Yeah. I mean, the Bible said 2,000 years also to, you know, get distributed. Well, of course, only 500 years since the printing press, right? Yes, Charles.
I mean, that's an astonishing statistic. I mean, and I guess my comment would be is that we don't seem to see enough of this in the mainstream media. I mean, we're not, I mean, or am I missing something? I mean, if the numbers are that large, this is world, well, of course it's worldwide, the Bible's worldwide as well. So, I mean, that's something that should be more...
You're right.
Known,
you're absolutely right. People, yes. We need to do a better job of getting our message out there and the successes. Now, honestly speaking, book distribution has declined a little bit in recent years. During the 70s and 80s was really a huge time of book distribution, and then it fell off quite a bit, particularly North America. Now we're on the rise again. We've had, in the last 3 years, 20% increases in 2 years in a row, and this year I think we're going to hit 10%. So we're up about 50% in the last 3 years, 50% increase of BBT books distributed in the last 3 years in North America. So, you know, we're really kind of getting the spirit back and getting back up there. But we actually need to, you're right, we need to do more, we need to be more visible, we need to get our public relations going more. All these things are needed. Good points.
My daughter told me I forgot her name, Miles Cyrus or somebody, is reading, has a picture of herself reading the Bhagavad Gita on one picture, and she's the most famous person in the world now, practically.
Who is it? Wasn't she some child actress, kid?
She had three pictures. She had three pictures.
One of her with the Bhagavad Gita?
One was reading the Bhagavad Gita, the next day the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the third day was SSSR.
Really? Oh, that's wonderful. Those things can influence a lot of young people.
Millions of viewers.
That's great. Just see. See, it used to, back in our days, you know, it was like the Beatles and George Harrison, you know, were our sort of celebrities, you know, and now there's getting so many new ones. Well, that's great. And, yeah, there's a lot of auspicious signs like that, you know, that I think we're really, this is just me, you know, I don't have any scripture to back this, but I think that we're really at a time where Krishna consciousness can really expand and explode. I mean, there's so many auspicious things that are going on now, and people are primed for it. You know, vegetarianism is increasing all the time. People's interest in yoga, meditation, you know, so many things like this are actually making the climate more pious and people more receptive to spiritual knowledge. You know, and we find wherever we go, you know, people are receptive. You know, it's like I mentioned before, you know, they have that yoga club in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, you know, and they I don't know if I mentioned it, but they were going to do yoga. Did I mention this before? Anyway, and the devotee who's going to do it kind of fell through at the last minute, so they just got this non-devotee, this young woman, who knew, you know, somehow to come and do yoga for them. Well, so of course she stays for their classes, you know, and you know, she's at part of the yoga club, you know, and she hears the classes, hears the Bhagavad Gita every week, and she was here for the festival of the Holy Name. You know, she came down with the Alabama devotees, and now she's practically a devotee. So, you know, it's like, you know, there's just so many people like this that are out there that are just ready to hear about Krishna consciousness. You know, and we've got to tell. We're the ones who have the knowledge. You know, it's kind of like, let's say that you are a doctor or you're a research scientist and you found the cure for some disease, whether it's Ebola or whatever it might be, and you just kind of, and you said, well, I have the cure, so I don't have to worry about it. Me and my friends and family, you know, we won't get Ebola. You know, we're cured. But you don't give it to anybody else. You know, and you keep it for yourself. People think, what's wrong with that person? So here we have the cure for the greatest disease of the material condition of life. And so we can't be miserly. It's not for us to hoard it and just try to enjoy it amongst ourselves or our little circle of friends, but we need to really get it out there and give it to everybody, as Srila Prabhupada did. Okay. Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.